Breadfilm Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from ITFA 2014, joined by filmmaker Nilita Vachani, whose film, Eyes of Stone, was screened here at the festival. So thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Matt.
Now, this is a film that's somewhat legendary among people who study documentary, have gone to film school, so it was such a great pleasure to actually get to see it. But I was wondering whether you might be able to tell our listeners who might not be familiar with it what it's actually about.
So the film is made in the cinema verite style, and I follow the story of a young woman who is possessed by demons. At least that's how she's considered to be possessed. And what does it mean to be possessed? Well, she's incapable of living her normal life. And her normal everyday life is that even though she's only 19 years old, she's the mother of two children. She has a 7-year-old son and a 2-year-old son. She's already had lost a child at childbirth. And she's married to a man 10 years older than her, who's a truck driver. And he's constantly traveling away from Rajasthan and going to the big cities. And they live in a little village in Rajasthan. So we meet Shanta, who's 19 years old in the film, a mother of two, and considered chronically ill, who hasn't been cured by anybody. And now her mother and her brother are taking her to this temple in Rajasthan, which is a temple for exorcism. And the goddess of this temple, a local goddess, is considered to cure all cases of possession. So we know in the film that she will get cured at some point, and once she's cured, she will go back to her husband and resume her daily living. And so I felt it was very important to know what the abnormal life is in order to understand what the normal life is afterwards.
Well, let's take it from the top. How did you come across the subject?
When I was growing up in Delhi, or rather I was going to college in Delhi, I saw a case of possession right in my grandfather's house. We had a whole family of servants, and the young girl, the daughter of our cook, would get possessed, and then she wouldn't bathe, her hair would be bedraggled, and she would be sort of chained up to the gate at the back, and a shaman would come and beat her with sticks, and there would be all this stuff going on. And she and I were sort of almost the same age, except I was able to go to college and she was tied up and beaten. And it was really a difference between her background and mine. And I had no way of understanding this at all. I was too young. But then I went to the United States to study. I did my MA there, and I was studying, you know, basically social studies. Anthropology and, you know, communication and film. I studied documentary film, and then this never left me. I always thought of this young girl, Puri, and what went on with her, and I felt I had to make a film about this. So when I finished studying, I went back to India and I just researched possession. I mean, there was nothing written about it, really. So by research, I meant I traveled from village to village, wherever there was a possession temple, wherever there was a Sufi shrine, and I would just listen to women's stories. And in listening to the stories and the, you know, I just felt I'd understood what this ritual of possession meant in a young woman's life, where there was really no recourse to anything. I mean, as you saw in the film, Shanta was married at the age of 10. So here's a child who's 10 years old, who's married off to a man who's like 20. And she says in the film, I thought he was my brother. I thought I would go with him. He'd feed me a banana. I mean, that's all she knew. And then 2 years later, at the age of 12, she has a child. And that's it. It's the end of childhood. So the only thing, I mean, for her, possession is when she gets possessed and she no longer behaves herself, in the sense she no longer takes care of the kids, she no longer cooks, she no longer cleans, her husband doesn't want her, and then she gets to go back home and be with her own parents and actually be treated as a child again.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, actually, how did they react to you filming them?
You know, we had to get permission from the temple. I had to actually get permission from the goddess of the temple, and the goddess of the temple is just a stone icon. But I had to go during the aarti, which is during the time of prayer, and I had to pray to her, and they told me, you have to ask her if she will allow you to film, and if she says yes, then one leaf, it's the neem leaf that she wears, a garland of neem leaves, that leaf will fall off, and it'll land on the bronze plate in front of her, and that means yes. And if you pray and the leaf doesn't fall, it means no. So everything depended on that. And I literally had, it was during a conch shell. The conch shell would be blown and I would pray. That was the amount of time I had. So I had to really, with full faith, with full belief, I prayed. I think it's the first and only time in my life I have prayed. And I prayed so hard. And the conch shell finished blowing and I opened my eyes and there was the leaf. So the goddess of the temple had said yes, which meant the temple said yes, which meant anybody there basically was behind the film. Wow. Even though they didn't quite understand what I was doing, but you know.
Like a spiritual release form.
That's so funny. That's so true. That's so true.
Now, I'm kind of, you know, I really admire this film. This was your first feature film, wasn't it? It's quite a brave subject to tackle. Did you ever feel the responsibility of the subject?
You know, I think one can only make brave films when one is very young. So I'm saying this to all the young doc filmmakers or wannabe doc filmers. When you're in your 20s, you can do anything because you're just completely fearless. I don't think I would do this now, you know. But at that time, I literally with a backpack on my back and I would just travel alone all over India. I look back and I think I must have been insane because anything could have happened to me. But it was just this absolute belief in something and wanting to do it. And if you want to do something so hard, badly, things just work out for you. I really believe that, right? Yeah. I mean, you make it happen. So I think I had done a lot of research, so I didn't think I was fooling around with a very important subject. I felt I had seen enough and traveled enough and done enough. And then I had this absolute, you know, belief in this one story, which I didn't know how it would unfold, because when I met Shanta, she was possessed, which meant she was in trance, which meant she couldn't even show me her face or have a conversation with me. She was not capable of doing that. So you're really going in with on a story on simply blind faith, because I don't know what's going to happen. I didn't know, you know, her husband would show up, and I don't want to reveal what happens in the film, but this was a journey which I discovered myself. But so the person I really talked to was her mother. I spoke to her mother at the temple, and I thought I could tell right away that the mother was this wise, wise old woman. And all I knew about Shanta's story was that, well, she's the mother of two, and her husband is not there very often. That's all. And I felt somewhere there was some kind of deep, deep, deep sorrow there. And I think that was enough to follow, to start on this journey.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. Watching it on the big screen, I could really admire the beauty of every shot. I think a lot of it has to do with the way in which it was shot on film. So how do you still find film compares with digital filmmaking?
You know, this is such a great question, because I think now, because digital filmmaking is relatively so much cheaper, I think people just shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot. And you don't have that same kind of critical gaze any longer at the frame. And when we made this film, I mean, it's a 90-minute film, and we had only 95 rolls of 16mm film. So the shooting ratio of this film is just 1:9. That's it. And we make the film over a period of 2 months more, in fact, 9 weeks. We're shooting at the temple every week, and we're shooting the aftermath once she's cured. And so the film stock has to last. It has to last because what's important here is the time. I want to spend this kind of time with her, and I don't have the full film stock. Yeah. So you just have to be, and yet it's cinema verite, yet I'm following her life. I'm not constructing anything, right? So how do you do it? I mean, it's a huge challenge. And I think what it made us us, as we are called now, veteran filmmakers, is we had to have this particular gaze. And the cameraman, this wonderful cameraman, Greek cameraman, Vangelis Kalambakis, who shot it, he and I talked a lot about how we would frame. And we wanted, because it's a very dramatic subject, it's titillating. I mean, it could be voyeuristic. It could be all those things I was trying very hard not to be. We always wanted to shoot context. Yeah. So, yes, it's about a possession temple and there are women who are possessed. But we didn't want to focus on close-ups. We wanted to show, well, how is the environment treating possession? So there are a lot of wide shots and mid-wide shots. And so if there's a woman who's possessed in the center of the frame, around her you'll see dogs walking by, you'll see children crying because these are their mothers. So how do the children react to them? That was what was important. How do the mothers take care of their children? How does the entire audience treat the possession? You know, we were interested in that. So we always see something through context and contextualization rather than going into close-ups of, you know, frothing mouths and rolling eyes. You know, yeah. It's not about that. And I also wanted to create a kind of mystical environment because I felt it there. So, you know, there are a lot of animals, a lot of geese, there's just a lot of the inside the temple, yeah. The sounds, the music.
So yeah, the sounds and the music too. It's all a really organic approach.
And because we had limited film stock, we did a lot of sound work. And yeah. So there's this whole oral landscape because sound was cheap. You could record endless amounts of sound. So even though the film stock was limited, sound recorders were constantly recording sound, and I was talking to people off camera as well. So there could be ways of weaving in important information, you know, or even when we were not able to actually shoot. So the editing becomes incredibly creative because you're working with all these materials, sound materials, non-sync materials, you know. In that main story.
It creates an amazing atmosphere. It was a real pleasure watching the film and a real pleasure talking with you about it. Thanks very much for taking the time.
Matt, thank you for coming and looking at a film that you saw at film school or something. I'm really delighted. Thank you.
Thanks very much. And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.